Zorbapastor on your health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorbapastor on your health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorbapastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. Although, Zorba, I mean,
come on, we're real. Yeah. We're not virtual. We're not automatons. And we are definitely not AI.
We are not AI. But I did notice, Zorba, you're not wearing one of those old school mirror disc headband doctor things.
No.
Do they still wear those anymore?
No, they don't. That went away with Dr. Welby many years ago.
Welby.
Oh, yeah. You don't even know who Dr. Welby is.
I have no
idea. But many of our listeners know who Dr. Marcus Welby was. It was a TV show.
Okay. We'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we have a few healthy living topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about ultra-processed foods, what they are, and how they damage you. Very important data that recently came out in the BMJ. Very important. And then 9 to 10,000 steps a day, does it make a difference? Does it actually convert you from being somebody who's sedentary to somebody who's being active? And does it drop your rate of death from heart disease? We're going to talk about that.
A lot of interesting stuff there. And what's our special recipe today?
Roasted olives with orange and rosemary. Ooh. It's a wonderful, wonderful dish. You're going to love this. It is tasty.
I really love olives. All right, to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. All right, our first caller now joins us from Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Oh, sure. How can we help you?
Well, I have a question about statins. I have high cholesterol. The total is a little bit high, about 230, and then my LDL was not low enough. I don't remember exactly. HDL was perfect. Triglycerides, perfect. And so my doctor wanted to put me on Crestor, and I really fought going on a statin because I feel like I have spent my whole life really being as healthy as I can be. I eat very healthy. I exercise a lot, and trying to avoid having to go down this road. Anyway, after some convincing, I went ahead and she put me on the lowest dose, 5 milligrams of Crestor. Well, after being on that, I don't know how long it was before we did some lab work, but the lab work came back with my liver enzymes increased quite a bit. Like way, I want to say, let's see. Well, I'm not even going to try to guess.
That's
okay. They were significantly increased, So I talked to her. I said, could it be the Crestor? And she said, well, you know, possibly. Let's go ahead and try going off of it and see what happens. So we did that, and it did start to come down a little bit, but still wasn't within normal limits. So she sent me to a liver specialist who initially we just did an ultrasound, came back fine, gallbladder fine, all of that is good. I have no symptoms of any kind of liver damage or liver disease at all. So my question is, now that my liver enzymes have kind of come back to normal, is there anything else I can do besides Crestor?
Let's kind of put this all together. So first of all, how old are you?
67.
67, okay. How about your family history? Mom, dad, how old were they when they passed, or are they still alive?
That's the thing. It's the family history, yes. Yes, my father and mother both had high cholesterol. My dad had several strokes. Mom and dad both had heart attacks.
Okay, so you've got a family history of heart disease. That, by the way, that's really important. If you've got a family history of heart disease, it means you're really at risk. So when we look at cholesterol-lowering drugs, specifically at statins, it's not just that they lower cholesterol. That's a marker, but they do other things. They reduce the inflammation that are in the coronary arteries and in the heart and basically in the body, and they reduce the risk you're actually going to have a piece of cholesterol that comes out or whether or not there's going to be a clot and so on based on cholesterol issues. So they sort of stabilize, if you will, the system in your body that may cause you to have a risk of heart attack or stroke. They don't just lower it. They actually make a difference. But let's go over to the liver enzymes for a minute. So The real question is, are these liver enzymes, why are they elevated? So they sent you to somebody who did an ultrasound of the liver to see if you may have something called fatty infiltration of the liver. In other words, if there's fat in the liver, it can mean that there's an increase in liver enzymes. And an ultrasound is a very good way to pick it up, but it's not 100%. It's somewhere probably in the 80%, 85% range. So that may be an issue. How much alcohol do you drink? Do you drink anything? Any alcohol?
Yes. But, you know, not a lot. I would say maybe a couple times a week.
Okay, not every day. Not every day.
A margarita, but I don't drink excess at all.
So you don't drink very much at all. Now, your liver enzymes have then improved and gone back to a closer to normal. The real question is, did the statins increase this, or did they just sort of pick it up afterwards when they happen to be going up and it has nothing to do with the statins? So your doctor really made a good choice. Let's take you off. Let's look at the numbers. But I think you should go back on and see whether or not the numbers go back up. I mean, that's the way to do it, because you're at risk, because your parents, you know, you've got a strong family history, and you should then re-challenge you with the statin. And let me tell you something. Most of the time when patients re-challenge with the statin, the liver enzymes do not go up, that it just is a spurious thing. It's just something that happened when they happen to measure it at the time. That's what I would do.
Good. Okay. Yeah, I need to save my liver for the margaritas.
Yes, you do. You need to do
That's
that.
That's a Jimmy Buffett song, isn't it?
Probably. Yeah, okay. Thank you so much. That's exactly what my doctor had suggested. So,
right. And you've got a good doctor there. This is a really good way. So I think you've got a good doctor there. Stay with your physician. They're doing the right thing.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic today. Now, on the show, especially lately, we've been talking about ultra-processed foods.
We have.
But it seems like the research and the studies just keep rolling out more and more about the dangers of eating a lot of ultra-processed foods.
I've got to tell you. So there basically are four food groups that we look at here. So unprocessed foods, eat a banana, eat a piece of fruit, you don't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. Have meat or chicken, you decide you're going to put it on the barbecue, maybe with a little bit of olive oil, then it becomes minimally processed.
Sure.
You know, so you're taking that minimally processed, you're heating it up, you're adding some spices from around, you know, that you would have in your kitchen. There's a third group where you're doing more processing, but the real bugaboo is ultra-processed foods. And these are basically things where when you read the label, there's stuff in it that you don't understand. So give me that drink. You've got a little drink over
there. Oh, sure, yeah. I have a, it's just like
What's it called?
I'm not going to say the name of the brand, but it's like a sparkling water with some caffeine.
And you wouldn't think that it was ultra-processed. So let's look at it. So first of all, carbonated filtered water. Okay. Citric acid, tartrate, gurmama seed, green tea extract, caffeine, ascorbic acid, sucralose, so it's got a little bit of, you know, that sugar substitute, glucolactone, ginger root extract, calcium, parabenzoate, natural color, really, natural color.
How long are you going to do this?
Until it's done. Chromium chelate, biotin, and cyanobacterium. So look what it has.
Okay.
That's what we call ultra-processed. So ultra-processed foods, I mean, it's a drink. You wouldn't think it was ultra-processed, but it is. So they looked at food, baked goods, fizzy drinks like that, sugary cereals, ready-to-eat products, you know, things that you buy in the store. It might be Campbell's soup, stuff like that. And it turns out that when we look at ultra-processed foods in America today, 58% of the total energy intake is probably from ultra-processed foods.
Wow.
In other words, it's a huge amount.
That's
that you don't even realize when you get ready. If you just look at the label, if it's got more than five ingredients, it's probably ultra-processed. That's at least what Michael Pollan says, but it's a good idea. So what they looked at, these particular researchers wanted to look at different studies of ultra-processed foods in an analysis of what people are eating. Basically, it looked over a three-year period, probably 10 million participants.
Wow.
So it's a look at multiple studies that were in there. And it said exposure to ultra-processed foods appears to be associated with 30 different damaging health conditions, from diabetes to high blood pressure to sleep problems to depression to anxiety to a whole bunch of other things. And so It's once again, we've got to begin to look at not just the food that we're eating, but the processing. So part of the theory is that ultra-processed foods are not just added in increased sugars and salts and others, but the way it's processed is changing our eating behavior. So it turns out that people eat a lot of ultra-processed foods on the whole, do not have their appetite satisfied, so they tend to eat, on the whole, 250 to 400 more calories a day because either it stimulates the appetite or it doesn't make you feel like you're satisfied with what you actually ate.
Hmm.
So you got to start to look at the labels. Did you ever think there was that much in that?
In that energy drink?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I mean, I knew it wasn't like a pure, beautiful food.
Yeah, but you look at it, it's got a whole but it's got a whole bunch of stuff in it. And I've got to tell you something else. It's very interesting. So here I've got a bottle of water from a major, you know, a major supplier of things.
Sure.
Okay. And it doesn't just say water. It's got purified water, potassium bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate, calcium citrate. What's calcium citrate for? Sodium chloride, that's salt, and magnesium oxide. And this is, it says purified water.
Is that part of the purification? Are those chemicals that are put
in
there? Is that part of the shelf life?
They said purified water.
Okay.
How can you purify water? I mean, what's purified water? Water is water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to purify water. You might filter it to make sure you take stuff out of it.
Sure.
But how can you purify it by adding five ingredients to it?
Mm-hmm.
So what is that doing to my appetite? Is that water that I'm drinking, which looks like it's normal, looks like it's great, it's got a beautiful label, but is that thing which has five ingredients in it, it's not just water, who reads that bottle? You just assume it's water. Is that then stimulating my appetite to begin to want to eat more and have more calories? And is ultra processing the problem with obesity in America today, that it's not just what we're eating, but it's all the stuff that we're doing to the food and doing to the water and doing to the fizzy drink that is making us want to eat more and drink more and be heavier?
Interesting research. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call anytime with your question.
Anytime.
And you can leave us a voicemail. And let's hear one of those voicemails now. This is a listener from, this is from the Gem State. You know what the Gem State is? You know every state has a nickname?
Gem State. Utah?
You're really close.
Wyoming.
Almost. This is a listener from?
It's not Colorado.
Idaho.
I've recently been prescribed Accutane. And from many sources, I've understood that it can cause dryness and many other things, but some of it, I don't know if it's myth or if it's true. So I was wondering what all the side effects occur with Accutane. Thank you.
So Accutane is something that's used in serious cases of acne. That's
okay.
What it's used for the most part. Women who take it have to be very careful because it can cause birth defects. There's a whole series. You can't just – many physicians cannot prescribe Accutane unless they actually go through a process of certification. So it's usually prescribed by dermatologists.
Hmm.
And it does have side effects. Side effects are dry mouth, cracked lips. There are a whole bunch of things that are side effects. Is the drug useful? For many people, it's a godsend because it really is useful, gets rid of acne, and it's worthwhile. If you're going to be on it, it's a matter of reading the side effects and dealing with that dryness. You take it for a period of time. Might be 2 months, might be 3 months, might be 4 months, and then you handle the side effects, which are dryness. So the answer is yes, but if you're prescribed it, it can really make a difference. And often one cycle of it can make a huge difference in anyone who suffers from acne. So, Carl, when you were a kid, did you have acne?
Not much.
That
maybe
much.
A normal amount, not
yeah,
a whole
yeah,
lot.
But
I
what
didn't
happened?
Have a problem
but with what happened when you looked in the mirror and you saw zit?
I mean, it was
didn't bother you.
It definitely bothered me.
Yeah, what'd you do?
I was not one of those people that was always popping my zits.
That's right.
I would just let
That's
it
right. but imagine,
run the
But
course.
Imagine how difficult it is if you're a teenager.
Sure.
And you've got zits, which of course is the vulgar name for, you know, for pimples that come with that. And then we all know people who had really serious cases of acne, and sometimes that can be extremely disturbing to people.
And it can last into adulthood
as
well.
It can easily last into adulthood.
Yeah.
It can scar the face. And it's got to be really treated. You can often treat it with a variety of topicals that work really, really well. But some are resistant. And Accutane, which is basically is the name brand of the drug, I can't remember the, how you, what the generic name is, that was a vitamin A congener that was discovered years ago, was a godsend because it makes a difference. It's been around for about 30 years. And people with very serious acne should consider going to a dermatologist to look about what they can do topically, and if that fails, to consider Accutane and other drugs that are in that class that can make a big difference in their life at that time and later on. It's a boon to people with serious acne problems.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before we take a break, Zorba.
Before? What are we taking a break for? Come on, we're on a show.
You want to take a break?
I don't know.
You got to take a break. There's a little, you know, there's some news happening, maybe.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. Let's go.
Things are happening.
Move on, baby. Let's go.
The world does not just stop because we're doing this show right now.
Stop the world, I want to get off. Goddamn.
Who sang that? That's a great country song.
It was a musical. It's a musical. It's from a musical called Stop.
I thought it was a country song.
It could have been. It is a country song.
Could be all these.
You know what? But it came from the musical. The name. Oh, yes, when I was a kid.
Okay.
Anthony Newley. For those of us out there listening musicals, it was a great musical.
All right. Let's do that segment where we give one of your naysayers a little bit of airtime.
I don't have any naysayers.
Wow. What kind of bubble do you live in?
That's right. Got it.
The world stops for the show. Zorba has no naysayers. All right. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, oh, oh.
See, I really think we should re-record that with you and your soprano, your middle school, junior high soprano voice.
Yeah, that's right. You got it.
All right, Zorba. This is actually two related emails I'd like to read, okay? First up, this is John in Trempealeau County, Wisconsin. Zorba, I appreciate all of your great advice. Longtime listener, however.
However, really? Does it have to have a however?
There's always a but or a however
right, with
these. However, it is a bit annoying to listen to the show when you and Carl talk over each other during the broadcast.
Oh, right. He's
not,
right. Yeah,
not,
yeah.
Hang on. Let me talk that's over right. you real quick. Not a deal breaker for me, just an observation. Although it drives my girlfriend batty. So that's from John. Do we talk over each other a lot?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. That's right. Hard to say. Hard to
we
say.
Must because, okay, this is
okay.
around the same time. So okay. I get a lot of these emails from the show.
Sure.
And I can see when they came in.
Yep.
Really close to same day, I got a second email, maybe like half hour later.
Cool.
This is from a listener named Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Zorba.
Hi.
I'm a huge fan of you and Carl, but you two are driving me crazy, both talking at the same time. I'm ready to pull my hair out. Please stop that. I'm sure it drives other listeners crazy as well. But then she says, love you guys, and then like a heart emoji at the end.
Oh,
so that's
nice. How nice.
But do you think this is the girlfriend who's driven batty from John and Trump?
You never know. Maybe they both wrote it at the same time.
Was this a team effort, maybe?
Yeah, it's a team effort to get us to stop from talking over.
As we talk over each other right now.
We will do our best.
All right. Do you disagree with the talk? Just post on the Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll try our best. See, I left some space in there for you to say that.
Thank you.
We'll try our best not
Thank
to talk
you.
Over each
Thank
other.
Thank you.
Oh, you're doing it now.
We're failing.
All right. Well,
again.
We'll have more of your calls coming up, more emails and voicemails, and we'll dive into a tasty roasted olives appetizer recipe. That's going to be pretty good, I think. So keep it right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRX.
The Public Radio Exchange.
Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor.
I'm here.
He's right over there. Yeah, I was just going to say, you're right. Oh, we're talking over each other. Sorry about that. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. 7413 if you have a question, healthy living question. You could leave us a voicemail too.
Always, 24/7.
Yep. But before we get back to those calls, let's do the recipe. So this is something I'm really looking forward to. Roasted olives with orange and rosemary.
Doesn't it sound good?
Oh,
I mean, sounds good. Don't you love olives?
I love olives.
Ask
me, Zorba, what kind of olives do I like?
What kind of olives do you like?
All of them. All of them. I'll eat any olive.
All of them. Those are your favorite
pizza,
olives.
Just smothered in olives.
That's right.
Like,
olives.
Any salads.
All of
put
them.
Olives
okay,
everywhere.
All
anyways.
Of them.
Anyways, let's do this recipe.
So start out with 2 oranges.
2 oranges?
Pound of large green olives with pits. So a good example would be the Castelvetrano olives.
Ooh, I love those. All right. A pound of large green olives
and
with
I'm
the pits.
Sure, and I'm sure it's an Italian name that I have definitely mispronounced, but it's Castelvetrano. But they're large green olives. 3 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
3 big tea extra virgin olive
oil.
You're
going to use some fresh rosemary, 3 or 4 sprigs of rosemary.
3 sprigs fresh rosemary.
That's right. 2 sprigs of fresh thyme.
A lot of sprigs here. 2 sprigs
right, of sprigs,
fresh thyme.
That's right. You've got to get that stuff from the produce section. 3 cloves of garlic thinly sliced.
3 cloves garlic thinly sliced.
You're going to use some red pepper flakes.
Red pepper flakes.
And if you like fennel, if you like fennel, 1/4 teaspoon of fennel powder. My wife never liked fennel, so I wouldn't use that. But if you like fennel, you put in some of that.
All right, 1/4 little tea fennel powder.
Let's make it easy. This is kind of a tapas recipe now that I think about
it. Yeah, sure.
You know,
it's
tapas
quick.
Recipe.
It's tasty.
Yeah. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees, then grate and zest 1 orange. Remove the zest from the 2nd orange with a vegetable peeler, and then juice both oranges. So you got zest and you've got juice, 2 different things. Then a 9 by 13, roughly, inch glass or ceramic baking dish. Toss together the olives, olive oil, 2 of the sprigs of rosemary, the thyme, the zest removed with the peeler, the orange juice, the garlic, and a pinch of red pepper flakes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Move it around, bake it, tossing it every 10 minutes until the olives are slightly shriveled and the juices have reduced to a glaze. And that, believe it or not, that's going to take about 25 to 30 minutes. And while the olives are still hot, break the remaining sprig of rosemary over the top. So now you're putting the rosemary over the top. Sprinkle with the rest of the finely grated orange zest. In other words, some of the zest you peeled, some of the zest you actually, you know, put into the little zest powder. The fennel powder on top of it, another pinch of red pepper flakes, and serve it while it's hot.
Oh, it sounds awesome.
While it's hot. It is delicious. And then what you do, your friends next to you, you've got a couple of, you know, maybe you've got some nice cold hoppy beer or maybe something, you know, maybe a little wine or something like that.
Yeah, what kind of
like
wine
that.
Would you pair with
this?
Well,
I don't know. You know, red wine. I'd have a little red wine over there. Or maybe I'd have some sort of made something with Campari. I'd make a Negroni, sit there, and I'd think about Italy, and I'd have the olives, and
the
I'd
old
have good
country.
Conversation. The old country, that's
think
right.
Think about the old
the
country.
Old country, that's right. The old country. That's right. But if you want a copy of this recipe, whether you're thinking about the old country or the new country or a different country.
Or the old country buffet.
Go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or of course, you can find us through Facebook. Why would this bring up the old country?
Oh, man, they got
it's
great olives there.
It's roasted olives with orange and rosemary, and it brings you back to the old country. Your old country was central Wisconsin, and mine was Chicago.
It was Minnesota, but same thing, really.
The old country.
A lot of old country buffet there.
That's ZorbaPastor.org, or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to those calls now. This is a caller from Wind Lake, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Yeah, I got a question. It's about my 10-year-old son.
Your 10-year-old son.
Yeah. So he's 10 and he's got basically since he was born, he's had a constipation problem.
Okay.
It's always been associated with one thing or another.
All right.
But this has been, like I said, been going on since he was born.
Sure. By the way, that's not unusual. A lot of children have constipation problems. It's really it's more common than you think. But now he's 10 years old.
He is on a generic version of Ritalin for ADHD.
Okie doke.
Mm-hmm. So now he's also on a laxative.
Mm-hmm. What's he on? I mean, they're laxatives, it's a big broad term, and they're laxatives. I mean, there are major differences between them. Do you know what he's taking?
It's a fiber supplement.
Okay.
Is mm-hmm. added to mm-hmm. his drinks. It's a powdered form, non-flavored.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then the other one, it's a Miralax.
Miralax. Okay. So he's on fiber and he's on Miralax. Okay, good.
But it just never seems to be any consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And there never has been. It's mm-hmm. okay. Well, he needs more fiber, mm-hmm. so we give him more fiber.
Uh-huh.
And okay, well, it's not necessarily fiber. He's just really constipated. But it's like, well, why? Why is it constant? And then it goes from one extreme to the next. So
sure.
It's either he's not going, or he's when he's going, it's not a regular stool.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay. So first of all, how regular are you with giving him the fiber supplement and Miralax? They're very different. One, Metamucil is a name brand. It's a good example. Is a non-absorbable fiber that gives a lot of bulk to the stool. And then Miralax, which is totally different, actually adds fluid and moisture to the stool as it comes out. And they're very different from stimulative laxatives like Ex-Lax, which you don't want to give to a child, and they can become very habit-forming. So let me go back a little bit to that. How good is he about taking both of those things, both the fiber and Miralax? Does he do it every day? Does he like it? Does he not like it? I mean, he's 10. So 10-year-olds have a mind. Kids always have a mind of their own anyway. How good is he about taking it?
He is good because he's understanding that there is a problem with him going mm-hmm. regularly.
Good, good.
And so he understands that. And they are powdered form, mm-hmm. non-flavored. Mm-hmm. So he does understand that it doesn't change the way it makes his water taste or something like that. So he takes it pretty good.
Takes it every day. Do you give him the same amount every day, or do you vary it?
Well, it's the same amount for a certain length of time, you know, trying to gauge
mm-hmm.
based on what he's doing. So let's say the fiber, it's a consistent amount,
mm-hmm.
the same amount every day. But when it comes to the other one, that one is the one that's fluctuating. So it's supposed to be measured based on the cap.
Mm-hmm.
So you go full cap or half cap or uh-huh. quarter cap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one that's been fluctuating. So if I give him a half a cap every day,
okay,
you know, he probably still won't go
mm-hmm.
once a day. It'll be like 3 or 4 days. If I give him a full cap, then all of a sudden, bam.
Okay. So a couple of things here. First of all, he's got, this is a long-term issue. Often kids will grow out of it as they become adults. It's got a term, a lazy bowel. That's sort of a generic term, common term that people use for it. So one of the things I would recommend, first of all, you want to make sure he's getting enough fiber. And if he's taking the fiber every day, that's really good. Sometimes doubling the fiber can make a huge difference. You want to experiment a little bit. If he gets more fiber in there, he might have more of an urge to actually have that bowel movement every day. The other issue is to actually measure out and give the same amount of Miralax, once again, generic Miralax, every single day, because that makes it more likely that he's going to start having regular bowel movements. And the third thought is, if he hasn't seen a pediatric gastroenterologist, this is where they can chime in, and especially often the nurses and the nurse practitioners that work with the gastroenterologist can really make a difference and give you some better ideas of exactly how to regulate what's going into his body so that what's coming out of his body is not alternating between constipation and diarrhea. Because if he's not going for 2 or 3 days often, then he can blow out, and that can be very bothersome to him, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about kids, of course, is that they vary in how much water they drink and how much fluid they drink. I mean, because they're 10 years old. So you don't really know how much they're going to drink. And you've got to just assume that when you're giving them more of the Miralax, which keeps the fluid in the gut, that you can regulate. But you can't regulate how much they're, you know, if they exercise more and they're doing more and they don't pay attention to what they're drinking, that affects their bowels. And in your son's case, it really affects your bowels. So you're starting to experiment. That's kind of the right thing to do. This is a long-term problem that is not completely unusual, as I said, that often kids get better when they become adults because they kind of know what to eat and how to eat it. But for some adults, it becomes the same problem where they don't have a bowel movement for every 2 or 3 days unless they take these supplements.
Okay.
Sounds like you're doing the right thing. Is he an active kid, by the way?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
That's
so
an understatement.
So that's an understatement. So you know what? Make sure you always have some water with him. That's what I would do also, because part of this may be, you know, hydration does make a difference. So he's an active kid. Make sure he's got a nice water bottle that you fill up. He always takes you with it, you know, so that he's taking water all the time, because that can also help your 10-year-old son. And 10-year-olds are busy, busy, busy. Carl is, yeah. How old are your kids, Carl?
My son's almost 9, so, but yes, I agree. Busy, busy, busy.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Wisconsin.
I would like to know if there are any therapies or anything that can be done about neuropathy in your feet. Thank you.
Big issue. Neuropathy in your feet, big issue. Diabetics are, it's a common issue with diabetics. Most neuropathy, I would say, is probably due to diabetes. And it can be tingling. It can be pain. It can be discomfort. It can be lack of feeling, lack of sensation. And in diabetics, it can be a big issue because if they don't know, if you're a diabetic, you should look at your feet every day because there may be a sore there that you're not aware of because you have a neuropathy. So it causes pain on one hand and a lack of sensation on the other hand. We have medications that help many people, but not everyone. Gabapentin being the most common medication, pregabalin being another one that is actually pretty common that's used for neuropathy. And that's about what it is. Now, there are many causes of neuropathy. Vitamin B deficiency causes neuropathy. If you Google neuropathy on the web, you will find probably a list of maybe 50 to 100 different things that can cause neuropathy. There is no cure for it. It's a matter of living with it, taking something for the pain if you have it. And if you don't have sensation on the bottom of your feet, looking at your feet every day and making sure that you wear shoes so you don't actually get a cut on your foot, because that can produce a problem. If you're walking around the house in your stocking feet, better to walk around with a house slipper or something to protect your foot, because it is a leading cause of amputation are infections in neuropathic feet, where a person doesn't realize they have an infection there and it smolders and it gets worse. So this can be a very serious problem. But unfortunately, there is no cure.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a listener email. The following question came from Phil, who writes, "What can you tell me about shockwave therapy for possible tendon damage in the ankle? My 37-year-old 7th grade language arts teacher daughter," did you get that?
I got it.
It took me a minute to get it, but I got that, "has been dealing with a chronic tendon in the ankle issue since last fall and is not having any luck getting over it. She's a very healthy woman who used to run but can't anymore.
Oh, that's
she has seen many doctors, therapists, and podiatrists without a solution. With x-rays and CT scans, the doctors all say her bones and tendons are in great shape. The latest therapist wants to try shockwave therapy next. She's at her wit's end trying to get relief. Thanks, Zorba."
Well, there's no good scientific evidence on shockwave therapy. On the other hand, if I've tried everything and if the MRIs or the CT scans don't show anything and I'm having trouble, then I would consider going and doing something like this to see whether or not it is. It's an alternative complementary therapy that has no absolute proof that it works. On the other hand, right now she's done everything in a normal fashion, and that hasn't worked either, and she continues to have pain. If she's seen a podiatrist and a physical therapist and others, and she's gotten a second opinion, then I think I would try something like this to see if it did something. Sure, might work. No proof, no scientific proof. That doesn't mean it doesn't work. Just means that we don't have evidence that it works right now, probably in the main case, in the fact that it hasn't gone through many studies.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. We have much more of the show to come.
We'll hear
more of your calls.
We will.
More voicemails. More emails, right?
More emails,
and we'll discuss another healthy living topic. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor
on your health.
Carl Christensen, sitting in Buck's studio right next to Zorba Pastor. He's answering your healthy living questions. And if you have a question, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to those calls, Zorba, we have a new healthy living topic here about step count, and increasing your daily step count may lower the risk of death and cardiovascular
disease.
That's
right. So, you know, this idea of 10,000 steps a day has been around since the invention of the pedometer. Where do you think that came from?
The pedometer?
Yeah, no. Well, the pedometer, you can think of that. The pedometer came from Japan.
Okay.
And a lucky number in Japan is 10,000. So in order to market the pedometer, they said you should do 10,000 steps a day. And so that's kind of become the de facto number. And the question that was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine is whether or not steps can counteract people's sedentary behavior. In other words, there are a number of people, many people, sit in front of a screen all the time, and will steps make a difference? In other words, can it counteract that? And so what they did was they put on an accelerometer, and it's kind of like a watch, like a Garmin watch, and a bunch of people, so they can see whether or not it would make a difference. They looked at the median step count, which was actually about 6,000 steps a day. That's the average in this particular study. The lowest was 2,200 steps a day, and the highest was over 10,000 steps a day. And by the way, once you drop below 2,000 steps a day, that really is bad for your health. It really implies that you're going to become much more feeble, you're going to become weaker. So 2,000, many, many studies have shown that 2,000 is the lowest number of steps you should do. But the meantime of sedentary behavior in people, they consider to be people who are sitting all the time, was roughly 10 and a half hours a day. You think that's a lot or a little?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Kind of seems like a lot, doesn't
seems
it?
Seems like
you
a
know,
lot. Kind
of, you know, that's why a lot of people now have standing desks because of that. Mm-hmm. And they looked at people over a seven-year period. There were roughly 1,600 deaths from cardiovascular disease. And lo and behold, the people who actually walked a minimum of about 4,000 to 5,000 steps started to get benefit. And when they got closer to 10,000 steps, they got more and more benefit. So you're basically looking at people who are sitting in front of their computer every day working. Mm-hmm. If they do up to 10,000 steps a day, they'll reduce the risk of going to die from a heart attack or a stroke. So in other words, if you're sedentary, it's more important than ever to get out there and start walking. So would you consider yourself a sedentary guy or not?
Not really, no. I'm not, really. You know, I don't work out all the time.
No, but you're not sitting in front of a screen all the time.
Some days I am, but
some
not,
days you
not
are, but
just,
I,
you know,
see, so
depends
these,
on what I'm doing.
But these were people who, they looked at that over time.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you've got a job where you're sitting all the time and you think, really, I'm sitting too much, first of all, sitting is the new smoking.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things we have to think about. You have to get out and move. But you want to get closer to 10,000 steps a day. 2,200, 2,000 steps a day, very bad. It means you're not doing very much at all. At about 5,000 steps a day, you begin to get benefit. But the closer you get to 10,000 steps a day, the greatest benefit you get. And it means your body is really moving. And our bodies were made to move. They were not made to sit.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's help out a caller now from right here in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Yes, so I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, I've been living with this for about 6-7 years now. Anytime I eat food, doesn't matter what food, or I drink water,
mm-hmm.
I see or I feel this mucus mm-hmm. stuck in my throat, and mm-hmm. I'll try to cough it out, and it won't go. I've seen doctor a couple of times, and they just tell me to gargle warm water, but it doesn't help.
So in other words, so when you're eating, you've got mucus that builds up in the back of the throat? Is that what's going on?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Any feeling in your stomach that's bad at all?
Yeah, sometimes, like when I try to, like, swallow it
mm-hmm.
For a long time, then I feel that pain in my stomach.
Uh-huh. So you've seen doctors, nurse practitioners, and they've said gargle more or drink more water. What are their recommendations?
There was a medication that I was asked to be on, but I forgot it.
Mm-hmm.
I usually don't like taking medicine,
sure.
so
sure.
I just forgot about it and never went back to it again.
Uh-huh. Did it help at all?
I'm not sure it helped.
Okay, so in other words, they gave you something. It didn't seem to help. Are any foods worse than other foods? You said it happens with any food, but are some foods worse than others?
I haven't noticed any particular food.
Okay.
Even if I eat fruits, like any kind of fruits or just anything.
Uh-huh. So I've got a question for you. Before you eat, do you hydrate? You know, do you drink a lot of fluid before you actually sit down for a meal?
Sometimes I do.
Because that can make a difference. You know, if you've got, what happens is, you know, when you actually start eating, you've got salivary glands that are building up and they're producing, if you will, lubrication and enzymes that go in the back of the throat that actually are helping to digest food. And sometimes that can be mucus. I mean, part of that can be mucus because you've got too much salivary juice that's going there that might actually be dry. So hydrating yourself before you actually eat can make a difference, especially if you're sitting down for, let's say you're going to have dinner or lunch or breakfast. Hydrating yourself for 15 or 20 minutes before you eat might thin these secretions out so they do not feel like mucus at all. And that's one of the things I would think about. I would think about maybe getting a small bottle of water and drinking a quarter of it or a half of it, because that can make a big difference in terms of what's going on in the back of your throat when you're eating. I think you should try that because you're looking for natural ways to do things.
I even feel it more when I drink water or eat foods that are fluid-like. So even if I eat a lot of fruits, I feel it more. Even if I drink water, I feel it more. And when I wake up early in the morning, I feel that also.
You can feel that also. So one of the things, by the way, can make a difference when you wake up in the morning. If you have a vaporizer, an ultrasonic vaporizer in the room where you're sleeping, and you moisturize the air when you're sleeping, we spend roughly a third of our lives sleeping. You know, it's roughly one third of our lives, a quarter to a third. And if you moisturize the air, that can make a difference too, because often your mouth will dry out and your mucous membranes will dry out when you're sleeping at night. So you might get an ultrasonic vaporizer, put it close to you when you're sleeping, and that can make a difference too.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
And then keep a diary to see whether or not different foods, when you say foods seem to do it, but keep a diary to see if there are different foods that tend to do it. Hot foods affect us differently. Citrus affects us differently. And what you want to do is find out if there's food or spice that actually makes things better or worse, because that can make a difference.
I was actually going to probably observe that when I eat food that are high in ginger and onion, I tend to observe that most often.
Exactly. And you want to see if it happens on a regular basis. You don't want to get yourself into a corner so it seems like everything does it, but you might discover certain things do it more than others. So vaporize your air at night, hydrate yourself as much as you can before you're going to have a meal, and keep a diary of when it's better or worse to find out if there are any spices or other things. And once again, all fruit is not the same. Citrus is different from things like bananas.
Okay.
I hope that helps. You can do this in a natural way. You can probably improve it by just taking some simple steps if you know what foods are doing it and what foods are not.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope that helps.
Hope so too, Doctor.
Take care now.
I love your show. And
thank you.
I pray for you to keep doing what you're doing to help us.
Well, thank you very much. That's very, very, very nice. Thank you so much for the compliment. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's take an email. This is from a listener named Ali Marie, who writes, Dr. Zorba, I'm a 26-year-old female, and I have chronic knee pain in my joints. My knees swell up to an unbearable degree of pain. I've had MRIs, x-rays, and tests run, and no doctors can determine why. Outside of this, I'm in generally good health. I don't drink alcohol, smoke tobacco, vape, or do any other drugs. I've been to the ER, and all they can do is drain the fluid. It's so painful that I can't walk when it swells up.
Huh.
Do you have any thoughts or ideas for me? I'm feeling frustrated and running out of answers. Thank you.
Well, this is where I recommend people get a second opinion.
Okay.
In other words, if you've gone, you know, first of all, if she has to go to the ER and has to get it drained, we know there's something going on with her knee that's abnormal. I mean, by definition, if you've got to get it drained, there's something going on. So, you know, and then you see physicians, you go, I'm not sure exactly what's happening. And this is often why I recommend people go to a tertiary institution. They go somewhere, university hospital, place like Hopkins, Mayo Clinic, or something else, some other spot, because they want to find out what's going on. And if their local area can't figure it out, you've got to get your knees drained. There's something there that's abnormal that you may be able to do something with. It may be an anti-inflammatory, it may be an injection, it may be that you've got something such as a meniscal injury that simply hasn't been picked up, but she needs a second opinion. I would not accept the fact that people don't know what's going on. I'd go somewhere else to get that. And I found out from my insurance where I could go that would be covered my insurance, and then I would go there and figure it out, because there must be something going on. Having your knee drained all the time?
Yeah.
What's happening? I don't know. Can't tell from this. She needs another person to look at it.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Leave us a voicemail. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Sharps Chapel, Tennessee.
I want to know, have you got a good cure for gout? And arthritis.
Well, first of all, gout is a form of arthritis. Gouty arthritis is a form. Is there a cure? No, there is no cure for it, but there are really, really good treatments. So it used to be, you know, it was a disease of kings and queens who ate a diet that was high in purine. They had lobster and they had shellfish. And, of course, it also, they had lots of liver. Believe it or not, liver actually has a lot of stuff in it you don't want to have. But it turns out there are very good medications for it. Allopurinol is a drug that's been around forever. It really works. It reduces uric acid in the bloodstream. That makes a difference. Going on a low uric acid diet doesn't work for most people. Most people need to have some medications for it. You can have some permanent damage, but it can be really, really painful. And the issue is, once it's painful, you've got to take anti-inflammatories. You have to take a drug called colchicine, which can also keep it down. But the bottom line here is reducing uric acid in the bloodstream from a variety of medications, especially the drug allopurinol that has been around for decades, can really make a big difference in gout and basically treats it. Doesn't cure it, but treats it. So that's the recommendation. If you're not in the medication, go to your doctor, talk to your physician, and get a prescription for it and get rid of the pain. It can be really awful. Imagine having a red, swollen, hot foot or toe or ankle or knee. That can
Not
take
fun.
Days to resolve. No, it's absolutely awful. By the way, do you want to know a famous person who suffered from gout?
Yeah, tell me.
Benjamin Franklin.
Ah, gotcha.
Louis XIV.
Oh, I thought you said you were just going to say one.
No, I was just going to say more than one.
You're going to roll out your gout
more
list?
More than one. Thomas Jefferson. I got a whole list of famous people who suffered from gout. That's right.
We You've can been put waiting down to the roll gout. This
I've been
list
waiting
out.
For years
and
to
got
list
your
the
chance.
People who suffered from gout. Finally, finally, finally.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we ride into the public radio sunset, Zorba, let's check in again.
Happy Trails are here again.
Yeah, we need that song.
Happy Trails.
Great song. But this song, how about this song? Let's check in again with your favorite nitpickers, the Grammar Police. I'm starting to look forward to you singing over the song now. It's just mixing in really well, and it sounds great.
Yeah, but it can't hold a tune. That's the real problem.
That's what I love about it. We'll just auto-tune it, right?
Okay, got it.
We'll fix that in post. All right, Zorba, this email came from Matthew in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who writes, Dear Dr. Z, I have determined that the Grammar Police are mostly made up of people with OCPD, which is obsessive compulsive personality disorder. Unlike OCD, OCPD affects one out of every 100 people.
Uh-huh.
People with this disorder like everything orderly, correct, and following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
They are also the people who are the most likely to point out that there is food in the corner of your mouth and cannot bear looking at you until it's removed. They're also offended when they spot people who don't have their dogs on leashes and usually cannot stop complaining about them until they have confronted the person. Things are getting really specific here. Matthew goes on. Finally, they are probably the people who reported you when you have left your garbage cans out the day after the garbage truck has picked them out, or for putting your old Christmas tree out a day or two early for pickup. I feel like Matthew's got a bone to pick here with some really specific examples.
Right. That's right. Very specific. Right. Right. Well, he may be right.
Okay.
Maybe he's right.
I mean,
next time somebody says, "Hey, you're not doing the right thing. Everything is not in order. I don't see everything in order." Say, "Are you part of the grammar police?" Because basically, they don't wear hats anymore. They gave out their hats years ago. They don't wear T-shirts anymore. They still have the secret handshake, but I've never seen it because I'm not a member of the grammar police. So I don't know where their secret handshake. And of course, they've got the insignia on the ring. Some people wear Super Bowl rings. Very few people. Mm-hmm. Other people wear grammar police rings.
This brings up something I just thought about, and of course I'm going to share it.
Please,
I just have a random thought I have to share on public radio right now.
Please.
And that is, okay, you're walking your dog.
Yes.
And it's garbage day, so there's garbage cans out.
Yes.
And you pick up your dog's waste.
Yes.
Public radio.
Yes, of course.
And you see an open garbage can.
Yes.
Are you okay putting it in there, or is that bad form?
I don't know if it's
what
bad
do you
form.
Do?
But I've done it. I've got to tell you that. I've done it, so I got to tell you. I do suffer from that.
What
That's
if you
right.
see someone do it to your
That's
garbage
right.
can.
Yeah.
They
well,
sully
I care.
Your
I'm a
beautiful
dog lover.
Garbage can.
I'm a dog lover.
Okay.
Besides, I don't sniff my garbage can. What's a plastic bag in the garbage can? In the bottom of the garbage can, really.
This took a big left turn. Sorry, audience. Do you want to join the ever-growing grammar police?
Or the dog lovers who throw their poop in other people's garbage can.
That too. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
I hope so.
Okay, if you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
Anytime.
To leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen.
That's right.
And our technical director is Brad Kohlberg.
That's right.
He's right over there in the
Absolutely.
Booth.
Absolutely. With his feet up on the desk. Just
You're calling
waiting
him out.
When I'm calling
right.
him out. That's
our theme
right.
music is by Leo and Ben Sidrin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.